Blog Talk Radio.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network. Archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
All right, everyone, and welcome to Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. My name is Daniel Michael. I'm sitting in temporarily for Jesse and Nicholas George, as she's having some technical problems as she's on the road promoting her new book, You, Me, Life Dreams. And briefly, before we get to our guest, I would like to remind everyone that Main Street Universe is a network of six shows at this point, including this one, Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. Your host is normally Jesse and Nicholas George, and she's the author of four books, Activating Compassion and its companion workbook, as you would, You, Me, Life, Dreams, and its companion workbook. She does workshops and classes and readings and integrative development and all sorts of things. So tune in Fridays at midnight, Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. Then on Sundays we have intuitive consultant Mr. Darren Boucare, and his show is both topical as well. He does open the phone lines to readings. He is a tarot and palm reader at Marie Laveau's House of Voodoo in the magical city of New Orleans. That's 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Sundays. And then on Mondays at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, we have Randy Goldberg with his show Science of Light. And Randy was once recommended as one of the top five metaphysical shows on Blog Talk Radio in the little e-zine that us hosts get. So congratulations to Randy on that. And Randy is a Vedic or Eastern astrologer as well as a Western astrologer, and he discusses Jungian archetypes and all sorts of different things. So check it out, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Then on 10 p.m. Tuesday evenings Eastern Time again, we have the amazing master herbalist, Miss Susan Weed, with her show Green Magic, Green Medicine. She runs the Wise Woman's Center up there in New York. So check it out. It's a half-hour herbal class that she does with us. So it's a shorter show, and it's very much information packed into a half hour. Green Magic, Green Medicine with your hostess, Miss Susan Weed. Then on Wednesdays, we have the flagship show, the one that started it all, myself and Kevin Baird, and now co-hosted with our associate producer, Janice R. White. And that is Main Street Universe. And we have now been on the air for about 4 years. We'll be coming close on the anniversary sometime soon. Janice has been with me now for a couple of those years. And Janice is as well the hostess of the World Reggae Party, which is a show right here in Fairfax, Virginia, on sort of terrestrial radio, if you will. Of course, this is internet podcast radio. Then on Thursdays, we have Queen Mother Imaku, and Queen Mother is a Kemetic priestess reminding people that Egypt is, in fact, in Africa and not in the Middle East. She does original language prayers as well as Kemetic yoga, all sorts of interesting social issues as well. So check her out when she returns. She's on a brief break, but she'll be returning sometime in the near future. Queen Mother Imaku with her show Renegade Wise Woman Radio. And that sort of completes our circle. We're back to Friday. And then Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, we have Mr. Kevin Baird, who's the creator of a series of oracle cards known as the Horizon Oracle, as well as a device to communicate with spirits known as the Pathfinder. That's a new thing he's working on. As well as an artist who's made these sort of lovely vases and the frozen smoke, which is sort of like cloud staring. So check out Kevin Baird at 5 p.m. Eastern Time with the show Walking on the Sidewalk, A Horizon Oracle's Journey. So, our guest this evening is a musician, Mr. Craig Carolus, who's a New Age musician, and I'm sure he does other sorts of music in his history as well. And we had two other great New Age musicians on our Main Street Universe Network before. On Kevin's show, we had Diana Arkenstone, and here on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour with Jesse and Nicholas George, we had Mr. Stephen Haltburn and a few others. So I'm going to go ahead. I see he's in the queue, and I'm going to go ahead and bring him on. And welcome, Craig, to Activating Compassion.
Hi, Danielle. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. And I am a musician myself, so we do have that in common.
Awesome. It's funny you mentioned Diane and Stephen. I actually met Stephen in New Orleans 2 years ago, and Diane, we're connected on Facebook. We've chatted a few times.
Absolutely, and she is so gracious and so friendly and accommodating, and without using the word improperly, she's just so pleasant to talk to. And in our workings with her, she's actually been on Main Street Universe more than once. One time it was for one of her anniversary episodes, and she's just one of the sweetest people to meet and to work with.
Awesome. Incredible musician, too.
Absolutely. Great atmospheric stuff. We have some of it here on our sound list. And all the songs we do have are all from someone we know. So everything we have, any song you hear, anything you've heard us play, or anybody out there in internet radio land that's heard us play, all come from folks we know, like Kellyanna or Diana Arkenstone, even a few things of my own, A Woven Green, another great sort of kind of a New Age rock band. They're maybe a little rowdier than just New Age, if you know what I mean, but they definitely sort of have that feel to them, and a great singer and great musicians. So a lot of these folks, we do have permission, and we have sort of an interesting music library now on our little show page, our studio page, that's mostly from people that we actually know and have met either in person or on the phone. So we're developing an interesting soundtrack here for our network.
Awesome.
That's very organic and just happens in real time over these last 4 or 5 years.
Perfect.
So, Greg, you got your start in Minnesota, up there in the Midwest.
Born and raised.
And I'm curious, what was your very first, or maybe what you remember as your very first musical introduction? Was it just wandering around singing as a kid? Was it something organized? Was it something in school? I'm curious what got the ball rolling.
Actually, growing up as a small child, I can remember visiting my grandma house in Wisconsin near Green Bay, and she had a little electric organ in her basement and used to just fiddle on that. Basically, that's how I learned basic melodies, just playing that. And at some point, I don't know if my family acquired that organ or if we just ended up getting one, because we had one as well for a while when I was a young child. That was pretty much the start of me playing with music. Obviously, at that time, nothing was serious. Shortly thereafter, I joined a high school band and did that all my high school years. Originally played percussion, and my senior year in high school, I actually got to go to an organization called Bands of America to learn how to direct, and I directed our field shows for that following summer, one in St. Petersburg, Florida. Our band at that time did a lot of traveling and actually had a reputation back then, a very good high school band. So that's basically where I got my start, I guess.
So a good program. So you feel like part of and it's always nice to have, and I always think it's an interesting topic, to have good mentors, good teachers, and a good program in anything in life. You always remember a great teacher, right?
Oh, yes. In fact, first album called Standing on Top, I actually dedicated that album to my high school band director, Mr. Ray Gove. He was a tremendous mentor. He was also in the Minnesota National Guards, and he directed the Minnesota Guard Band at the same time as doing the high school teaching.
Oh, interesting. We had a chorus teacher. Now, I was late in life. I was more of sort of, I guess, a gypsy musician or a street musician. I was sort of self-taught. But I did have, at one point, I kind of started playing guitar more. Of course, we're not interviewing me here, but I just thought I would share this. I started playing guitar more in a little after high school, actually. So I was a little bit of a late bloomer to music. I used to sing all the time, and I still sing. But when I started playing the instrument and really taking it more seriously, it was actually after school and all that. But I did have a music theory teacher just as I was starting. I was about 18 years old. And though I have many flaws musically, one of my positives, I guess, is I have a pretty good sense of pitch. And I identified the pitch of a vacuum cleaner, and it was F sharp, so it was kind of a slightly odd one. And he was very impressed. And
wow.
He's like, and he starts talking to me, and he actually pulled me aside. He's like, I think you have perfect pitch. And he kept doing, like, this test on the piano. And I got it right most of the time. I think I got one of the notes wrong. But I had only been playing guitar for a few months at that point and learning what the notes were. But I just started associating them with songs, and that's how I would remember them. You know, A is like this song, or F sharp, I think I actually associated with Crazy Train with Ozzy Osbourne, and I said, oh, I think that's F sharp. Dun, 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 you know, so, but anyway, of the many paths of, you know, there's interesting things about learning independently, but always you remember when you have a really good teacher, and I felt like he was inspirational. And I've had other great mentors as well, but we'll move on from there. We'll say, okay, so after high school, and I saw that it said that the band had traveled a bit, so I guess you gained some more experience.
Definitely. Go
ahead. Go ahead.
After high school, you know, almost right after high school, I joined the military, and obviously didn't do music during that time, other than on my own. I actually bought a couple keyboards and just kind of played on my own, taught myself how to play, if you will, as far as keyboards go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, growing up, I grew up on rock and roll music. I can remember the 8-track tapes of Bay City Rollers and Tommy James and the Shondells. And then in my high school years, I think one of my favorite high school or bands at that time was like Van Halen and that age anyways. Right. But listening to rock music, I never really listened to the song. You know, some people listen to the lyrics, some people listen to the music. I very rarely listen to the lyrics and always listen to the music. And, you know, certain songs that had synthesized sounds or keyboard sounds are what caught my ear. And sometimes I always wish they would do something a little different. And that's what kind of got me interested in doing my own music. It wasn't until I was after basic training, I went to school in San Antonio, and one weekend I happened to go into a mall there, and there was a kaleidoscope, you know, a red laser at that time, playing two music, and that caught my ear and my eye. I've never seen either one of them before, so I walked up and took a listen and watched the kaleidoscope play to the music and asked the clerk, what is that music? And he said, it's called New Age music, and the band happened to be Manhattan Steamroller. I ended up buying that CD that day, listened to it, and I've been hooked on that style of music ever since. Over the years, I didn't really know what I wanted to listen to, and it's up until recently, the last, I'd say, 5-10 years, I realized what it was that I was missing back in my younger days. What I really wanted to hear is this style of music. After the military, I joined a rock band with two of my brothers and a good friend of mine, and we played for about 10 years, all cover music, 80s, 70s, 80s, 90s rock. Yeah. And so I kind of put my own thing on hold until we decided to hang that up, and have been doing my own ever since, my own music.
And it's such a more satisfying feeling. And, of course, the market keeps changing. The entire music business is different now. I mean, I'm 43. You mentioned 8 tracks. I remember 8 tracks. You didn't really fast forward, rewind.
Oh, yeah.
The whole thing. But the point is at some point, I got to the point where, of course, I don't mind learning cover songs. I'm not all that. I'm not, like, anti-cover or anything. But when you get into it originally for expression, and then you make it into your own thing, just like the project I'm in now, it like, becomes its own little spirit. You know, it becomes its own little life. And you're so happy you created it. And then to see if you can make that thing, you know, go out into the world and grow, and you're, it really has that sort of you against the world feeling without trying to make it too combative.
Definitely.
And it's so much more satisfying to me to bring that to the world. Though it's fun to play covers, nothing wrong with it, but to bring, like, this new creation, to compare creation to play, I don't think it's that much of a comparison, if you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean. On my own website, I try to explain what I was thinking about when I wrote a particular song or composition, just to give the listener some sort of an idea where the story or, you know, why the title of the song, that sort of thing. And, you know, most people, or I shouldn't say most, some people, when they listen to a song, I know I do myself, I wonder what they were thinking, what inspired them to write that, and what's the story behind it, that sort of thing. It's nice to be able to share that, but, you know, if you listen to a song just on the radio or you know, it doesn't matter what genre, you don't really get that. You know, you might take in something different than what the artist was thinking about while he was writing that song or,
right,
or composition. So I totally get what you're saying there. It is its own spirit.
And it's not always a bad thing if somebody else takes your meaning differently, if it means something important or valuable to them either.
Exactly. I always encourage people to think of your own. You know, what does this make you think of? I try to turn it sometimes when I'm actually talking to a listener. What did you think about when you listened to that? A lot of times it is different than what I was thinking about when I wrote a song.
Exactly. And as we are just human and there's going to be variation, you know, I'm not not someone who's ever stuck on perfection. I always believe things are always evolving. They're always flexible. They're always moving. We're always, everything's in motion.
Definitely. Adam,
everything. And so if it means and it moves someone else in a way that maybe you didn't intend, well, to me, that's just a good thing. Negative at all.
You hit the nail on the head. It's like its own spirit. It creates feelings within itself. The good vibe, if you will.
And they've been proving now, I just heard a new study. If you remember years ago, and you might like this, they've rekindled the flame for this study again recently, where they were attempting to prove that by listening to certain types of music, it actually helps the brain make connections and helps make children, helps them develop better and be more intelligent, certain types of intelligences, including linguistic. And
wow.
It actually helps to make those interpretive, logistic, linguistic intelligences for young children if they listen to, especially like classical music and things like that. That's what they were using in the test, I think. So I don't know how much other forms of music they tried. And they've actually revisited this study. And it is sound, it is vibration, and everything moves and everything vibrates. So to me, it makes perfect sense. One scientist even said that the musical waves actually imitate, actually sort of mimic or are incredibly similar to all of our other linguistic basic thought waves. And I thought that was fascinating that they've rekindled the fire behind this, because they were trying to poo-poo that study for a while, and now they sort of found some new, better evidence to say that it really does have an effect on the human soul and the human brain.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. They've been revisiting it, and I think it's great that they have.
Definitely.
So then, after this, and after you started doing your own thing, after the cover band, you started getting, I guess, to what people will just loosely call new age music.
Yes.
And so describe to me, what's the motivation, what's the overall feel for that style of music for you?
Okay. A lot of it, you know, the first CD I did, which I mentioned a little earlier, called Standing on Top, a lot of that music had been written well before I decided it's time to put a CD together. It was just over the years messing with certain little melodies and things like that. The first track that I actually wrote on that CD is called Far Away. And it's actually, to me, I wouldn't consider it new age music because it's got electric guitars and drums, things like that in there. It was the first track I had written for the CD and ended up being the last track that I put on the CD because of its nature in sound. Like I said, I don't necessarily consider it new age, but had to put it on the CD. The second CD I did called Family Values, the story behind that is my father passed away in January of 2011, and in December of 2010 was when I released the first CD. So he obviously heard the CD prior to him passing, but didn't hear it after it was released. And so I decided to do a song for him, kind of like a tribute, and name the song after him. And 2011 was kind of a bad year for my family. We had three immediate family deaths in the family, mm-hmm. and one close friend, and within a six-month period's time. And as each one of these occurrences happened, I decided to do a tribute for each of them. And that is what kind of inspired me to create the second CD. From there, I thought, well, this is kind of a family thing happening here. So then I ended up writing a song for my wife. I kind of wrote a song as a recap, which is the last track on that CD. And it was an easy decision to call the CD Family Values, because to me it was based on my immediate family. And the third CD called Journey of Divine Instrumentation, took me a while to think of that name. And basically I was trying to come up with an acronym for Jodi. One of the tracks on that CD is Jodi. I was going to dedicate an entire album to a girl I went to high school with named Jodi Huzentrout. After high school, she went on to school to become a news anchor. And
oh, wow.
Some people may or may not have heard her story. She was working in Mason City, Iowa, and one morning while getting into her car was abducted. I believe this was in June of 1995, if I remember correctly, and has not been seen since.
Wow.
So next summer will be the 20-year anniversary, if you will, of her disappearance. So it's hard to do an entire album about one person, if you will, inspired. So I decided to do the one track, but name the album after her, and that's where the acronym came up with, as far as Journey of Divine Instrumentation, to me, is an acronym of Jodi.
Okay.
There's also a track on that CD. I've got a twin brother that's a marathon runner, so I did a track for him, which technically could have gone on the second CD as part of a family tribute, but the name of that track is called Marathon Man. Because I spent time in the military, I've still got the military blood in me, if you will, was the reasonings behind on the third CD of doing the veterans, a tribute to the veterans. I've actually got two tracks on there dedicating to the veterans and the military in general, if you will. So a lot of events that have happened in my life are what inspired me to write, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going back to the first CD, the song I'd mentioned earlier called Far Away, which was kind of a rock song, the name of that track came because I was far away from home, and it just kind of made sense, I guess, if you will.
Absolutely. And we actually have, I see in the song bank here, we actually have a copy of that one and some of the other ones you mentioned. I thought we would go ahead and play one of them.
Perfect.
And this one is Far Away, since you just led into it. We'll do that one first.
Okay.
So, this is, folks, Greg Carolus, and this song is Far Away. And we'll be back in just a moment or two. You're listening to Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour, and we're talking to musician Greg Carolus. And here's his song, Far Away. Thank you. And it was his song Far Away. And welcome back, Craig.
Thank you. That's a good tune.
And you mentioned many motivations, you know, family values, veterans. And I think it's interesting because people, you know, think New Age music, and again, I'm not trying to put people into positions and labels too much here. I'm just saying, you know, the nature of how people think. And they might sometimes think, oh, they might be mildly surprised that someone who's a quote, New Age musician would write a song, you know, honoring veterans, as you mentioned before. Not that they necessarily should be, but you know how people's minds work and how people's perceptions are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I often wonder if you talk about that, if people give you sort of any sort of reaction with a song called Family Values or a song called Veterans. They say, oh, are you a Republican? Are you conservative? Or if you are, it still doesn't really matter. But I'm curious if anybody has discussed that with you before.
Not so much. I mean, I did do, I don't know if it was an interview with a New Age interviewer, if you will, called, or his name is John P. Olson. He's got a website called The New Age Music World.
Mm-hmm.
And he had mentioned something about some of the rock tunes. I did a song for my nephew who had passed away. I mentioned on the Family Values album called Jacob's Tribute, and I almost didn't put that song on there because of it's more rock than it is New Age, and I think that took a lot of people by surprise. But that's probably mm-hmm. the only thing I've heard anybody say. I know I myself think back to when I first started looking at marketing my music on the internet. You know, a lot of places that you go to submit your music, they ask, well, who do you sound like? And I always laughed at that because I sound like me. I don't want to sound like somebody else. So, you know, there's so many different genres in the New Age music, and I think most of my music, none of it falls in just one genre. It's all different categories, if you will. So as far as what you're asking, for, that's probably the only instance anybody said anything, but I always think about that instance where somebody might ask you, who do you sound like? And, well, it's, you know, some of my music might sound space music, some might sound more rock, some sounds more orchestration, that sort of thing. So it's hard to put a place on that.
Mm-hmm. And people, you know, it's just human nature, and I've gotten used to it over the years. People like their labels, and it's not always a bad thing. I mean, sometimes it's just human nature to go, okay, here it is, you're presenting me with something, what or my expectations almost, perhaps. But I totally know what you mean, because it happens to everybody that's in the songwriting world. It certainly happens to me. So who do you sound the most like? And it's always an awkward question. You think by now, at one time I just came up with an answer where I just said, semi-acoustic, sometimes hard, psychedelic, holistic, digital, earthy, space rock. And I just, bam, there it is. Just because you get sick of answering the question sometimes.
That's pretty good.
So you did mention, and now we'll get a little bit more into the song portion of this as well, you mentioned another one called Family Values, and you also mentioned Jacob's Tribute. And we have both of them in our queue here, and I think I'll go next with Family Values, which you did explain earlier before.
Yeah.
Some things going on with the family. And maybe any last little explanation of this before I play it?
Not so much an explanation other than the song, the track Family Values, from which is the title track of the album Family Values, is still my personal favorite song. Out of everything I've done so far, it's still my favorite.
Okay.
Why I don't know. I think it's because of just the melody, and you know, there's a little dramatic features in there, if you will. It's again, that song is kind of a recap of the events that happened to my immediate family in 2011, and you know, not all negative. It's some positive things. So the music, the melody of the music kind of changes within the song itself, which you'll hear.
Absolutely. And that's interesting when you say it's your favorite, because I've had favorites that weren't always the ones that went over the best when I played it live. Like, it wasn't the crowd's favorite, but it was mine. It's just a funny thing. But anyway, this is Family Values by Craig Krolas, and we'll be back in just a moment after this one. Here it goes. right, everyone. And that was Family Values by Craig Corrales. And you're listening to Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. I'm Daniel Michael, turning his mic back on now. Welcome, Craig. And I thought that song was absolutely beautiful. I just love the melody. I love the sort of dark, eerie, either cello or violin or whatever it was in the early parts of it. And I just thought that was a great melody, and I agree with you there.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I could definitely use it as a theme song to a movie or something. Like a real sad part of a movie.
I've heard that before.
And now I do have a question that some of our listeners might like to know. Of course, I'd like to throw out any plug right in that you can find him at www.craigcorrales.com. And it is linked to the show page, so you can find it on the show page and just click blue link, click on it as well. And I'm curious also, how many of the instruments on your recordings do you play? Do you play them all? Do you sort of have a small band or group of studio musicians that come in?
Believe it or not, most of them are played on my keyboard, and the rest of them are played on my computer.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, no, unfortunately, no live, you've heard some vocals in there even. That's all done on software, if you could believe that.
I can't, the modern age. So you don't have other pesky musicians to deal with then?
No, it's all me.
So it's both the good and the bad, right? It can be a lot of fun being in a band, and it can also be one big soap opera.
Yeah, like I said, I did the rock band, even with my brothers for 10 years, it could get crazy sometimes, but, being a one-man band, the downside of it is, someday I would like to get out, and I currently do not perform live, obviously, but would need to put a band together to do so, and that's something on my bucket list. I think once I get enough material put together that I could put on a good show, would be the next step forward, if you will.
And think of it this way. Longtime recording artist Kate Bush just started playing again since the 70s. She hasn't played out, I think, or early 80s, and she's been doing like a 22-show little mini tour. I think it's all in London or something like that. And I love Kate Bush. I'm a fan of hers. And great to see her playing live. I would love to go see that show. So
definitely,
it can happen, and her music can be a little dreamy at times as well.
Oh yeah, yes indeed.
And it is an interesting thing because you can spend so much time in the creation process, and I've definitely done this. And clearly you have, if you're doing this all yourself, that then you think to yourself, okay, taking it out to the world beyond showing them the recordings, what's the best way to do that? You know, getting the right technology, getting the right band, getting a combination of the both. It can be done, but it's not cheap. I mean, music is not a inexpensive hobby/living, depending on what position you're in.
That is very true. You know, I'm definitely learning what being classified as an independent musician is all about. I know after my second CD, I actually had a radio promoter approach me and wanted to promote the CD itself, and I thought, oh, this sounds great, you know. But the cost of it was just, I said, no, I ended up doing it myself. And it actually has done quite well, better than I expected. I got to put a little plug in. I actually, after the first CD, I had no idea how to market my music. And I bought a book that was written by a pianist named David Nevue called How to Market Your Music on the Internet. And it was an easy read, and he pretty much covered everything. And that's how I've gotten my start, getting my music out there.
Mm.
So So, it takes time. It's definitely, it's a lot of work. It's definitely something that doesn't happen overnight.
And that author's name was David
Nevue, N-E-V-U-E.
Okay. I may have seen
it. Yeah, worth checking out.
Sure. How to Market Your Music.
Again, it was called How to Market Your Music on the Internet is the name of the book.
Hmm.
I actually met David a couple years ago. He does a lot of touring. He's a full-time musician now, a pianist again. His story is he lives in Oregon. He used to work for Syntmatic, the company that makes Norton antivirus. And like most musicians, one day decided to pull the trigger and become a full-time musician. And he started a radio show called Whisperings, which is on 365.com, I believe, is the website for the radio show. When he tours, he does a lot of he gets a lot of the other pianists to tour with him, and they put shows on in private houses. And 2 years ago, he did a show in St. Paul, Minnesota, with another musician from St. Paul. And there was two pianists from Minnesota and himself that put on the show. Excellent show. But it was an honor to meet the guy whose book I actually read and learned how to get myself started and to get my music out there, if you will.
Absolutely. And it's another great thing about the technology of the day, where I had actually given up music for a while, and then I saw, this was right before I was back on the internet, and then, got on Facebook and all that other stuff. Right before I got back on, I remember hearing the song I thought was so pretty, and the lady's name was Jodell, I'll throw the name out there, and I just really liked it, and I sent her a message saying, I caught your song right when I started doing music again. And it just felt, I'm not necessarily saying she was the reason or that song was the reason. I was saying, but it just kind of caught, something catches you at the right time. And just
exactly.
Felt a little bit inspiring. And she was like, oh, thank you for saying that or whatever. And I think it's so interesting with the technology, just like you were talking about, in the modern era we live in the internet, as you said, marketing music on the internet, where you can make these connections and meet people you admire, meet people that have inspired you, and meet people that have helped you, even though it's been from a distance.
Early on, I used to go behind the scenes of my website to see where people are actually stopping and visiting from, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a couple years ago, but I remember seeing on there the name Christmas Island, and I thought, where is Christmas Island? I had no idea, so I had to Google it. I take that back. It was Easter Island, but I had to Google.
Okay.
I've heard of it on documentaries with the statues.
Right, with the big statue faces and all of that.
Yep. But no idea where it was, and I thought, it's pretty neat to know that people are listening to your music halfway across the world.
Absolutely.
Yeah, technology today is incredible.
And it's like anything else. It's a tool. It can be used for good. It can be used for bad. It's just neutral.
Definitely.
To itself and to how we use things and into how we interact, of course, with each other, the human element being involved.
Definitely.
And now I see Jesse has another song here, and this one is, and it's under your name, and this one is called Carry My Soul. Maybe you could describe that one a little bit.
Okay. This was Carry My Soul is the track. It's the last track on the Family Values album, and this is a song that's kind of a recap of the entire album. again, this album was inspired by the death of my father, my nephew, and my sister, and my nephew's girlfriend, who were the four I mentioned earlier in the show that had passed away in 2011. The whole name of the song is Carry My Soul to the Heavens Above. And so, again, the track was just inspired to be a recap of the entire album. You know, kind of sad, but inspiring at the same time, if you will. So that's what the song means to me, and the reason, the purpose behind the song and why it was created.
Okay, and I think just because the title grabbed my eye, I think that's the one we'll play next. And so this one is from Craig Carlos, and this is Carry My Soul. We'll be back in a minute. Thank you. All right, everyone, and we are back with Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. I'm your temporary host, Mr. Daniel Michael. It's normally Ms. Jesse Ann Nichols George with our Late Night Friday show. Now, sometimes this doesn't always seem late, but my work schedule's been a little different. Truth is, I'm naturally a night person, but I've been working a lot this week during the day, and I'm going to go ahead and turn our guest microphone on. Welcome back, Craig.
Thank you.
And I think some folks in the audience, as we talked about playing shows and whether or not there's a band, if it doesn't get, you know, not too much into your personal business, but just they may be curious, is this your full-time living? Is this what you do for your main income and living?
No, it is not. I actually work as a press room supervisor in a family-owned print shop. Been working there for, in February will be 20 years.
Oh, been there a long time then.
Yes, definitely. Someday. It's on my bucket list to be pull the trigger and go full time, but.
Oh no, I'm with you. I'm on the same exact journey right now. I'm jumping around doing construction work. I'm an electrician. And as well as making the shift. I'm also a writer and all that. So, and of course, internet radio host.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to work on finding ways to where all of the artistic things are the full-time living would be a beautiful result. And it is a different business than it used to be. I mean, I'm 43. I'm not going to ask you to say how old you are, but I'm just saying that when we were younger, even just as far back as the 90s, even the talk was always like, you know, get a record deal. I still remember all the old timers. You just get one hit song, kid, and then you can retire off of that thing. You know, it was always about the big deal and the one song and the one hit and. You could retire off this, and you know, and you can make millions of dollars. I really think it's a much more dramatic, different. Doesn't mean you can't make a living, even a good one, doing it, but it is a different industry than it used to be, than the old model. So we all are little micro entrepreneurs versus waiting for the, you know, the big break. There's breaks, but it's not exactly the same, if you know what I mean.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, even the development of CDs and now MP3s and that, CDs seem to be going away because of the technology of MP3s. And, new generations, especially the younger generations, MP3, the quality of the sound is not the same as you would get on a CD, but they don't seem to mind too much. It's the convenience of it, being able to take it with you in a small little package.
Yeah, and another interesting aspect of the whole thing is the idea of paying for music, which seems to
Definitely.
Be becoming like a dinosaur now.
Definitely.
It was at the end of the what you might call the big money CD era. It was about $20 a CD. It was about 18 to 20 a CD, depending where you lived. And I think you can't even get angry at the kids because they just simply didn't grow up in that. I mean, I saw a lecture where it was a couple of music executives from the old, you know, record companies. I forget the companies. Gosh, one of them I think was Geffen or something, but it was two like pretty big record companies, and the one was being very unrealistic. He thought that the old way was going to come back, and that some form was going to come back, and it might in some strange form that you and I, or at least I'll just speak for myself, I couldn't predict. But the whole point of what I'm saying is that the one guy knew the future was coming, and the other didn't. The other thought that the CD form was going to either stay or come back. It will in some ways. You still sell CDs at shows. That is a way you can still make money off them. So if the show's not paying you that much, you can sell some CDs if they like you. But as far as, like, making, you know, oil-barren money as a rock star from your record, quote-unquote, record sales, the one executive at the meeting, to shorten the story, literally said, how many people in this room, it was a room full of college kids about, and this was a couple years ago, so this is some time has even passed since then. I mean, this is 7 or 8 years ago. And they asked, they were all 23, 24, how many people here have ever bought a CD at a music store? And nobody raised their hand in the whole room in this auditorium. Like two or three kids did. And they were probably like the teachers or something that did, you know. And he's like, folks, they just haven't done it. It's just not what they do. You know, you can be mad about it, fight it, if you're trying to defend the old guard, if you will, or just find a new way to survive within what's going on now. And that's, of course, I think the healthier way to view it.
Yes, definitely.
I don't have all the answers either. But then again, you know, it was hard to get the big old record deal too. So there's a lot of ways to look at it. That there's a lot of opportunity in the new music market. It's not exactly that same ridiculous money just being thrown at you like in the old days. But I still think there's opportunity there. So it's a matter of being clever and finding it, and just like you said, buying the good, interesting marketing books or what have you. I also think it thins out the herd in a way to where now you have just really passionate people doing it and not just people thinking they're going to get the big payday.
That is true. That is true. You know, just like a lot of things, because with technology, just about anybody, you know, you don't even need an instrument anymore if you don't want to. You can actually create music right on the computer. But, you definitely got to have something that's marketable to make a living off of it and for it to just take off and take care of you financially, you know. You know, there's so many musicians out there in every genre. It's just, it's a tough market. And like you said, if people prefer to stream music versus buy it, it makes it even more challenging.
Because that used to be the trick in the old days. I don't mean trick, but, you know, that used to be the thing, is they were buying your album. It was the record business.
Yes. Yeah. You know, it's amazing to me that vinyl's coming back too slowly, which is neat to me, because I think it's not just the music, it's the artwork and everything else that comes with it. So it's, to me, that's fascinating that trend is coming back.
It is, and there's even a little store right down the street from my house here that's kind of like that. And it's kind of a cult following, if you will. You see, like, some young college-age kids hanging out with, like, tattoos and, you know, leather jackets and everything out there. And they're buying vinyl, not in the mass numbers, but it's there, and they're sustaining themselves, and they're making a living off of basically a vinyl shop. And I think that's kind of fascinating.
It is.
And they do shows there, too. In fact, they had, if you remember the band Men at Work.
Oh, yeah.
What was his singer's name? Colin, was it Faye? Was that his name?
I believe so, yep.
I think that's what his name was. He actually did an acoustic gig there at that little vinyl shop I'm talking about.
Wow.
So that was kind of, I thought that was kind of cool.
Huh.
And I was trying to get him on the show, actually. It just didn't work out. But, I went there and watched, he did the acoustic gig, and it was funny because as soon as he started it, he looks at the audience and he goes, I know what you're all thinking. You're like, oh my God, he looks old. And he was kind of like joking about himself a lot of the time. He's like Scottish guy, or Scottish-Australian maybe both, you might have, but he said his parents had a music store and a vinyl shop growing up, so he had a record, he grew up in a record store, so I thought that was kind of interesting, and so he's like, so I'm happy to be playing in one.
That's pretty neat. Yeah, I like that band back, you know, back in the 80s, the old 80s style music. I remember that band well. Never seen them play in person or in a show, but love their music, though.
Yeah, that was the only time I saw him was at the local the local vinyl shop here. Now, back to some of your things here. You mentioned another song, and you had discussed, we discussed genres and what, you know, people discuss labels and genres and all this sort of thing. And I believe you mentioned one that you said was a little heavier than the, maybe what the quote-unquote New Age crowd would have classified in the same way. And I believe, was that the one you were talking about that was Jacob's tribute?
Yes, yep, that's the one. It's actually a song, again, I wrote this song for, as a tribute to my nephew, whose name was Jacob. He was one of the ones I mentioned earlier that had passed away in 2011. And he was a musician himself. He played just about everything, guitars, keys, drums. He even bought himself a pair of like bongo drums and stuff. He had his own trap set, his own guitars, a keyboard. Very talented musician. So when I wrote this song, I decided to do a tribute for him, and most of the music he listened to was kind of within the rock genre, and which is what he liked to play. So I thought, well, let's do a tribute for him in that manner, if you will. I almost didn't put the song on the album Family Values, but the meaning behind it, and the story behind it, and the story behind the album itself, I said I have to do it, so I did it. And it is kind of odd when you listen to the CD because most of it's pretty mellow, and then you get, this is the second track on the CD. It's a rock song, if you will. So.
All right, and I totally agree, and I like variety, so I'm always cool with that. Like, you know, people like to put things in little boxes, and I'm like, well,
yeah,
I view it as a bigger box or one that maybe isn't so closed. It's okay to go on a journey and go through tunnels and valleys and bridges and occasionally a rocky
mountain.
Absolutely. You know. So anyway, this one is Jacob's Tribute by Craig Corliss, and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
welcome back. That was Craig Carolus and his song Jacob's Tribute. I'd like to remind everybody listening to Activating Compassion, the Midnight Hour. The hostess is usually Jesse Ann and Nicholas George. I'm sitting in. I'm Daniel Michael, the founder, co-creator of the Main Street Universe Radio Network, of which Activating Compassion is on. And I'm going to go ahead and turn Craig's microphone back on. And welcome back, Craig.
Thank you, Daniel.
And definitely I could see that one was a little more upbeat.
Oh, yeah.
And use a couple of different instrumentations there. I thought it was interesting. There was something that almost sounded like a dark string in there at some point. But from there, what I want to do now is shift from discussing, you know, genres and all that sort of stuff, which are all subjective conversations anyway. They can still be interesting, though, because they have a place. People like to know basic categories. Like I said before, it's just human nature. I mean, even I probably do it to people, right? Well, so what do you do? You know, what kind of thing you do? So we understand that. But we don't always stay on these things in an absolute way. I think most people wouldn't even want to.
No. You know, the way I look at it there are certain musicians that I listen to, and some even being my favorite musicians, you know, in certain genres. Some have 10, 15 CDs out there with hundreds of tracks. The more I listen to some, and obviously not everybody, it starts to sound the same. You know, you
right.
start hearing the same instruments and the same melodies, if you will.
Right.
I hate to say it, but to me, it kind of goes stale, if you will.
Well, I agree completely. I like variety. I like having a direction, but I also like variety. Sometimes I've been so eclectic that it felt like, here's the danger of being too eclectic. And I'm saying this as someone, like I'm criticizing myself in a way here. So this is, you know, criticizing my own thing I've done sometimes, that you can be so eclectic that no one feels like you belong to them. Or that eclectic nature can make a whole bunch of people feel like that possibly you belong to them. And that can be tough when they're always talking about, you know, I'm not trying to make it sound corporate, but, you know, when they talk about, you know, direct, you know, finding an audience and marketing to the audience. And again, I'm just talking musical. I'm not even necessarily talking money or anything. I'm just saying finding that audience. The band I'm in now, I'm not trying to make it too much about me, but I'm just saying, but the band I'm in now, it's a little more focused than it has been. We have a little more of an image and sort of a beautiful logo as well that we had an artist pick up for us. And we kind of have a spirit and image, and I'm perfectly cool with it. It'll evolve and change later on, but right now it's what we're doing. And it's fun, and I enjoy it. But what I want to get onto next is some different aspects, talking about personal, and for you,
okay,
Craig, habits or patterns or schedule. So what I'm getting to is, do you have a songwriting schedule or pattern? Or, you know, like you hear sometimes writers talk, they wake up and they type for 3 hours, and then they go about their day. Do you have anything like that, a ritual, a habit, a pattern, a schedule, anything of that nature?
I did, but it's ever-changing, if you will. I gave up. Once I started getting serious writing and recording, I gave up a lot of my other hobbies, if you will. You know, being from Minnesota, I used to do a lot of fishing. I hardly do that at all anymore. My full-time job, I do work nights, so I'm home all day long, and which for me is perfect because I have the house to myself. So while I'm doing recording and mixing and that sort of stuff, I can turn it up and play it as loud as I want and not disturb or wake anybody up, if you will.
Mm.
When I get back to saying it's changing, is this summer, the last 3 years I focused a lot on music, and on my off time from work, if you will, I dedicated a lot and committed a lot of time to writing the material I did within the last three CDs, if you will. I'm currently working on my fourth CD, and I started on it last fall, and I've hardly touched it at all this summer because I've dedicated more time to home projects and things like that, if you will. And I told my wife, I said, when the weather turns cold, I'll go back to focusing on my music, which we're getting close to being there because I'm getting that itch, and the weather's definitely changing. So once I commit to going back into it, a lot of times I'll commit 4 to 6 hours a day during the daytime, and whether it be writing, recording, mixing, you know, whatever stage of the game I'm at, and try to do it as much as possible, you know, whether it's daily or every other day. But that's probably my pattern, if you will, or schedule, if you will. Once I'm into it, just like a lot of things in life, once I start something, I want to finish it. So I'll go at it as best I can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for each track or each song, it's, you know, it's a little bit different. I've written a song within 3 days, and I've had some songs that have taken over a month to put together. So it's different. And I know the stuff, the material I'm working on now, I'm in no hurry. I've said nothing about any release dates or nothing like that because I'm just going to take my time with it. And when it's ready, it's ready. You know, I'm hoping maybe next year sometime, probably late next year, if anything. But, you know, usually 4 to 6 hours or so during the daytime, you know, in the week. It works out, like I said, great for me because I'm home alone and can pretty much do what I want without any interruptions.
And that's always been a time that's good for me. I enjoy practicing and writing when I'm kind of by myself. I don't always need an audience, you know, for that sort of thing. I never do that sort of thing. I like to perfect it and then take it out. I don't. So yeah, if you have roommates or if you have a spouse or whatever, I do like my practice time of getting things done or my writing time to be when I'm alone. And I'm curious, and this is just a funny personal question, is
okay.
You mentioned a year, so it made me think of seasons. And when you mentioned writing in the winter, I've always felt more inspired when things start to cool down a little bit, like in the autumn or in the winter. I'm wondering if you have a favorite season or one where you feel more creative.
Yeah, definitely. You know, obviously I don't work on summer projects all summer, but I'm an outdoor type of person, and I like to be outside when it's nice outside, just like
mm-hmm.
most people. The older I get, which, by the way, I'm 46, the Minnesota winters are, which they, you'll hear people from the northern states, a lot of them move south or go south with the wintertime. The cold winters in Minnesota are getting out to me a little bit. I wouldn't mind going to warmer climate, but not doing that right now. You know, there's not much to do in the wintertime outside other than ice fish, snowmobile, you know, whatever outdoor activities you like to do. Or,
yes, I'm in Northern Virginia. So I'm in a climate that changes often, Maryland and Virginia. I'm from Maryland. So I wasn't,
okay.
Yeah, maybe exactly talking about Minnesota winter.
So, yeah, wintertime is my best time to write. You know, the days are shorter, and it's just nice to be indoors doing something you love to do.
Yeah.
So I do get most of my work done in the wintertime as far as the music side of things.
I have, too, historically. I've written a lot. I'll start writing more in the fall. I feel like exhausted in like the August hot summer or something. And as soon as it starts to cool off a little bit, it's like I feel like all the cells in me kind of wake up a little bit. I've always been like that. I was born in January, so maybe that's why. I don't know. But anyway, back to another song. And then after the song, we might wrap up this interview. I have a couple to choose from, and I'll have you choose.
Okay.
There's one here called Entrance. There's Veterans, and there's Aftermath. Which of those three would you maybe like to discuss and then have played?
I think the first one you mentioned is actually called Embrace.
I'm sorry, you're right. I said it wrong.
Not a problem. That one stands out to me simply because at the beginning of the show, I got to put a plug in here, if you will.
Sure, we do.
You mentioned Diane Harkenstone being a guest there.
Mm-hmm.
When I finished the song Embrace, I do my own photography and video stuff, so I create my own videos that I put on YouTube and that sort of thing. And when I did Embrace, I connected to everybody I'm connected to on Facebook and invited them to send me pictures or videos for the song Embrace. And Diane Arkenstone is one of the people that sent me a photo for this video. For the song Embrace, if you will. So
great. She's so engaged and likes to meet people and is gracious. I truly enjoy her.
It's definitely down to earth. One of those musicians I've never met her in person would love to.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to go ahead and play Embrace and maybe a little bit of history behind the song, what it was song about.
This is actually the first track of the CD, Jody, if you will. And it's just something I kind of put together. The video part of it, if you will, kind of tells the story by itself. I asked everybody to send me a picture of a one word that goes with the word embrace. So, on the video itself, I had the word embrace embedded on the top of the screen, and then whatever word they came up with. So it's just whatever people embrace, if you will.
Okay.
Which could be anything.
Right. It could be embracing your passion. It could be about someone in particular. So many ways that could go. So here it is,
yeah.
Embrace by Craig Corliss, and we'll be right back after this.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour on the Main Street Universe Radio Network. My name is Daniel Michael, sitting in for Jesse and Nicholas George. And our guest is Craig Carolus, and he's a musician. Some people say New Age musician because we've discussed the labels and everything else earlier this evening. And welcome back, Craig. Your mic is on.
Thank you.
And one thing I would, because I saw a little bit of the video for the Embrace thing, and I don't think I got the whole thing, but I saw some of it, and I remember thinking the one I would have posted was Embrace Your Fears.
Yeah, definitely.
One of my favorite lines to any song is a song by Peter Gabriel called Darkness, where he says, "I have my fears, so they do not have me." I always thought that was a great line.
That is a good line. I like that.
On the tour, and had his daughter singing back up on that tour. That was the Growing Up tour. Nice, very good concert. And had the video of that in Milan, Italy. But anyway, back to your projects, and I'd like to do a plug here. If people want to find Craig Carolus, it's www.craigcarolus, as it sounds, .com. That's CRAIGKAROLUS.com. And, of course, a copy of the video we just mentioned, which you said Diane Arkinson sent something in as well, from the song Embrace, is there, and it's a whole bunch of people holding up signs and doing different things to say, you know, what would you embrace? Some people said love, some people said life, some people said the flaws. I think one person said my idea was fears. So I like that as a project of having people involved with you. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. You know, I got pictures from essentially all over the world for that. Which, to me, again, with technology, it's just incredible that you can connect with people and put something like that together where, like you had mentioned earlier, back in the 80s and 90s, we could only dream of doing something like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's people I never thought I was ever going to hear from them again, whether they'd be for better or for worse, ex-girlfriends, whatever. and some of them you're like, wow, you know, you're happy for, and you're like, wow, I would have never talked to her again. And sometimes it works out nicely, you know. And
Yeah. You're
just amazed at the, without trying to sound like, you know, older generation preaching to the kids out there, but it is, if you didn't come from that and if you didn't live in internet age, it does still sometimes fascinate you, even though I've gotten used to it and I do an online radio show and, you know, everything else, so I'm used to all this interconnecting all the time. But it is, if you sit back and think of it and you think of the connectivity and you think of the possibility of unity, and if you already have a philosophy, as I do, of that all things are united anyway and not separate anyway.
Yeah.
That it is an amazing thing that we're just sort of falling into what we already are. We already are already physically connected. Every atom is connected to every other atom. Every electron scientifically moves because the other ones move. They rely on the movement of the other ones, as they say.
But I couldn't agree more.
And I always think it's interesting when some people still want to hold on to the old guard, the old archaic separateness, which in my opinion is just proving itself more wrong with every passing moment.
Yeah.
So I think what we're going to do is we'll pick one more, Craig, and then sort of call it an evening. It's been a very nice conversation with you this evening.
It's been a pleasure being here, Daniel.
And I see a couple titles here. One is one we talked about, the veterans one. The other one is Aftermath. And the other one that I see remaining is One Dance. And I'm wondering which one of those three you might want to pick and talk about, and then we'll play.
Let's do the veterans tribute. Again, because of my military background, it's to honor all veterans. And that was the whole purpose of putting this track together. Doing the photography stuff. Veterans is actually the song I wrote for Memorial Day, if you will. So to pay homage to those who have fallen, where Veterans Reprise, which is another track on the same album, is in honor of all veterans, both active duty and those who have served, those living and those who passed on. But Veterans itself is paying homage to those who have fallen, if you will.
And it strikes a chord here because I live in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and, of course, we have Arlington National Cemetery very close by. And I've been there. It's a pretty amazing place. And
The video I put together is from a vacation, if you will, a trip out to Maryland, and we did go through Arlington, and I had my camera with me and did filming. So the video for the song is filmed, most of it's filmed at Arlington Cemetery.
Oh, okay. And I thought they had some pretty cool, like, Greco-Roman structures on top of everything else. It was an interesting place. It was definitely an emotional place, and we were there, you know, visiting with people that were visiting some fallen friends and family. So it strikes a chord. And before we go again, I want to say, because we'll exit with this song, Veterans. We're talking to Craig Carolus, and www.craigcarolus.com, K-A-R-O-L-U-S.com. And thank you so much for joining us again, Craig.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure being here.
And Jesse messaged me on Facebook and said, well, she promises we'll have another interview sometime in the reasonable near future. And she had some technical difficulties. And this is Activating Compassion Midnight Hour. Our guest, Craig Carolus. And here is his song. It's called Veterans. Thank you all, and have a great evening. And remember, you're listening to Main Street Universe Radio Network, the network reminding you that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. Have a good evening.
Archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.